is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. We are resuming our two-hour format today. Please visit the RBN website at republicbroadcasting.org for the general schedule. For my program schedule, visit my website, spingola.com, to view the guest lineup along with relevant links. During the program, email your questions or comments to spingola1 at yahoo.com. My regular email is deanna at spingola.com, but I do not look at it during the program. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website, spingola.com, or by going to spingola.chatango.com. We have a very last-minute change as the airlines altered my scheduled guest itinerary, and he is currently in an airplane, so he was unable to be with us today. However, I hope that we still have a good program, and I'd like to share a number of things with you. One of the first things that I wanted to mention, and this is something that I got from one of the listeners, and it is from a gentleman by the name of Chris, and he says, "I've been in New York, Island Park, since yesterday. This small town of 4,000 is completely devastated. We have nothing here, no electricity." He says that he is at a firehouse which has a generator, no cell service, no heat, no gas, and he says, "I could go on, but most importantly, no assistance or coordination from FEMA, Red Cross, etc. The town feels completely ignored. I watched resources go through Island Park, down Austin Boulevard, and completely bypass this town to go to where the press is, Long Beach. Sorry to say, but in my opinion," and this is Chris talking, "the rescue effort has been a complete show for the media. The resources are going where the cameras are. What we need now are voices for us. Obviously, we have no way to contact the media, radio stations, Red Cross, or the Salvation Army. Please call them and let them know about Island Park. Everyone here lost everything, and they are getting limited or no help from the outside." So this is from Chris. Something else that's very interesting is from packalertpress.com, and it states, "New Jersey contracted RFID evacuee tracking tech just days before Sandy formed. The state of New Jersey announced a 5-year contract for RFID tracking technology used to assist in evacuation by identifying and monitoring the location of evacuees and emergency assets during hurricanes or other disasters just 4 days before Hurricane Sandy began to form." So this is very interesting. We are going to do a program on weather modification and geoengineering on Friday. But this is very interesting. I have several documents on my hard drive, PDF files, pertaining to, and they are government documents, I think I have about 7, beginning in 1995, talking about owning the weather and how they were going to be able to control the weather. So this is something we will talk about at the end of the week. My prediction for tomorrow is that Romney will win by a landslide. Now, I really don't care which one of them wins. It's not going to do any good because they're both on the same side, just from different directions. Alrighty, we are going to take a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Stay tuned.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American-owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Are you prepared? Are you ready? You should be. CampingSurvival.com is your source for camping supplies, survival gear, and survival food. Whether you are an emergency preparedness-minded individual interested in MRE and colloidal silver, a hardcore hiker in need of paracord, a water filter system, and fire piston, or just need a basic first aid kit or emergency kit for the family, CampingSurvival.com is the right place. Call CampingSurvival.com today. Toll free 800-537-1339. CampingSurvival.com. It's not about the end of the world. It's not about surviving a hypothetical plane crash. It's about the satisfaction you get knowing you can take care of yourself and or your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. Call now 800-537-1339.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with micro plant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of micro plant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, Microplant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, is an agreement signed by the governments of Canada, Mexico, and the United States, creating a trilateral trade bloc in North America. It took effect on January 1, 1994. NAFTA has two supplements, the North American Agreement on Environmental Cooperation and the North American Agreement on Labor Cooperation. Globalists created NAFTA to decimate the middle class by destroying the productivity of this country. George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton promoted and endorsed it. As soon as George W. Bush became president, the CIA, in conjunction with the Mossad, implemented 9/11, which, according to former Senator Bob Kerry, a participant in the deadly Phoenix program in Vietnam, had been in the planning for 30 years. Bush and his handlers used 9/11 to justify an invasion into Afghanistan and Iraq, which required the young men and women of this country who probably would not have been able to acquire jobs. They used the war to distract the population from the systematic dismemberment of the nation's economic foundation, except for those multinational corporations who benefit from warfare, the very same companies that members of Congress invest in and become millionaires from. During the Bush presidency, at least 50,000 corporations due to NAFTA and other government regulations moved offshore. However, the media kept the population distracted and failed to adequately and honestly cover the economic loss of production, the real standard and backing of a nation's currency, not gold. With those concepts in mind, I am going to share some selections from The Transfer Agreement and The Boycott Fever, 1933 by Udo Valendi. This book is available from the Barnes Review. Now, as I go through these principles here in this booklet, I want you to keep them in mind and relate them to what is going on in our country. The same thing is happening. It is just under different circumstances. Okay, according to the 21st law governing the amendment of the criminal law of the German Criminal Code, Section 40, which was implemented in 1985, German nationals, including the 18 million refugees who dared to describe East Prussia, Pomerania, East Brandenburg, Silesia, and Sudeten, or West Prussia as legitimate German territories and who called the expulsion of millions of people a violation of international law and an immense injustice by any standard will at once be silenced with arguments such as fascist, get out, revengeist, militarist, war criminal, or worse. Now, within this law, there are sharp criticisms about equating or denying or minimizing the crimes against the Jews with other crimes. It demanded that these crimes could not be compared. However, 3,280,000 Germans died under the most bestial circumstances during this expulsion. Now remember, expulsions are carried out by governments, by weather conditions, by all kinds of things. Now, this is, again, getting back to the text, this has been substantiated beyond a doubt as a historical fact, and we are expected not to equate these crimes with certain other alleged crimes of which judicial notice is usually taken by German courts and which to question is considered an indictable offense. Now, in the communist East, anyone denying or refuting Germany's sole responsibility for the war, insisting that an impartial investigation be carried out, would have been incarcerated long ago for instigation to boycott. According to Western Democrats, always purporting tolerance, such a man is likely to be ranked amongst the people who are always thinking of yesterday, or hate mongers, or Juden fodder, or incorrigibles, or Nazi agitators. In short, these people absolutely unworthy of any discussion, bordering at best on cases of the mentally incapacitated. Although Commander-in-Chief Eisenhower had no idea of political conditions prevailing in Europe, he was nonetheless concerned principally with the annihilation of as many Germans as possible, and he declared at the start of the Ruhr offense, and I quote, "I hope that every German west of the Rhine River and wherever we attack will be destroyed," unquote. The Russian chief propagandist, for that matter, continuously incited the already hateful and politically fanaticized Red Army to kill all Germans, men, women, and children alike, declaring them subhuman. The merciless bombing campaign was aimed at the extermination of the German population, and its victims were mostly women and children. Those Germans opposed to the leadership were denied any opportunity of making peace offers on their own to the Allied leaders. This immense tragedy is nowadays considered liberation, and this perversion of official parlance is generally referred to as the democratic learning process and the expression of political wisdom. These and similar slogans are being churned out day after day all over the world in the media and in parliaments and political panels. This verbiage, created by powerful interest, is being swallowed without any sense of responsibility. How can anybody with such an uncritical attitude be expected to learn from history? To an informed observer, it is a frightening experience to note the amount of recklessness, irresponsibility, and lack of consideration that permeates not only the political life, even that of the large powers in dealing with each other, but also the writing of history. He who no longer finds his way through this confusion of disinformation and outright lies is frightened because of his dependence on job, career, or pension. He can no longer have an opinion of his own, let alone express it in public. He, therefore, continues to be a victim of propaganda and the prevailing system in power. He has to put up with everything that is offered in the field of information. He must suffer his own nation's defamation and mutilation, the vilification of his former comrades in arms who died for their country, the imposition of the burden of guilt to the last generation. He has to accept the brutal expulsion of his people from their homestead, where they had lived for generations without recourse to law and justice. He is even forced to applaud all this as the blessings of liberation, the same way as the revelation indoctrinated into him that in 1945, with the victory of the peace-loving, democratic, and humanitarian forces over the Nazis, the paradise-like state of peace and law, long craved for by mankind, has finally arrived, and that the will of the people has been fulfilled everywhere. Alas, anyone who follows world events, even cursorily, knows how many conflicts, how many wars, how many massacres, and how much injustice and mendacity, how much irresponsible propaganda and agitation has been recorded in the annals of history during the past decades right up to the present, and now neither Germany nor National Socialism has been involved. The causes for this dreadful situation must therefore be found elsewhere. We must be allowed to ask whether or not the leading elite in world politics is still in any position to think clearly, rationally, and free of emotions. The people on our earth must or would certainly not have the constant fear of impending disaster if objectivity and justice for all were common for action in the world's capitals. The informed, however, has learned to some extent to look into the future and to analyze current developments. He therefore understands that unilateral and biased criteria and dialectical acrobatics are bound to escalate existing conflicts between nations. He knows that no effort should be spared towards solving political problems and clarifying historical context. The goal should be objective debate, no matter whether certain people like it or not. It is only natural that historical truthfulness, being very influential in world politics, is of extreme importance. We hope that this pamphlet is a contribution towards this end. We do not justify, exaggerate, or minimize, claim, or deny in order to pursue a certain line. We do not balance one crime against another. We try to present facts rather than opinion. A very valuable contribution towards clarifying the German-Jewish relations during the period 1933 through 1945 was provided by the young Jewish author Edwin Black with his book, The Transfer Agreement. His objective analysis and his emotion-free description is refreshing, although, as it seeps through again and again, he appears to be conscious of a certain amount of pressure to which he finds himself exposed by his environment in the States. Dogmatic statements on his part, according to which Hitler, in 1933, intended to conquer Europe, if not even the world, that his four-year plan proves this, that Hitler promised to rid not only Germany of the Jews, but to cleanse the world as well, and finally that the clouds over the world were darkened with the smoke of incinerated human beings and killing camps such as Auschwitz and Treblinka, must therefore be accepted as part and parcel of the study. Not is it very scholarly that E. Black presents as facts Jewish American newspaper yarns from 1933 and thereafter about alleged events in Germany without first taking the trouble to check them for their veracity. All righty, we are going to a quick break. We'll be right back.
These annoying collection calls.
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with a resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Chlorine, fluoride, pathogens, and more are in the water you drink day to day. Do you want the ability to remove and reduce those harmful things in the water you drink? You can. How? With a Berkey water filter. A complete standalone gravity filter system that requires no electricity and no plumbing. Use for emergencies or for every day. Berkey systems come in 7 different sizes. Where can you get one? From GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com. With the purchase of each system, you get 50% off accessories, such as fluoride filters, water level spigot, and sport bottles. Plus, free shipping on all orders over $25. For a limited time, get 5% off all ceramic systems when you use coupon code RBN. Call GetBerkey at 855-GetBerkey. That's 855-438-2375. Or visit GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and I am talking. I'm sharing selections from the Transfer Agreement and the Boycott Fever, 1933, by Udo Valendi. And Valendi says that although Edwin Black's book is good, it has some truth in it, he is also stating, justifiably so, that Black incorporated a lot of big fat deceptions in this book. For instance, he takes Rabbi Stephen Wise's recurring lie for granted that Hitler declared a war of destruction on Jewry in 1933. And this, although it must have occurred to him as an expert, his own book proves this, that Hitler had to cope with far too many problems in his own country and was absolutely unable to cope with worldwide plans of destruction at the same time. A whole chapter in E. Black's book is indeed headed The Weapon Hitler Feared. It deals with the historic power of Jewish-led worldwide boycotts. Black ignores the Jewish declaration of war, which occurred in the Daily Express on March 24th. Judea declares war on Germany. While his extensive study should have made him aware of it, he should have afforded this announcement the importance it deserves. For that matter, he should have mentioned the statement by Henry Morgenthau in 1933, and this is only one chosen from many similar ones. Morgenthau said, and I quote, "Germany must be turned into a wasteland, as happened there during the 30-year war," unquote. Finally, and regrettably, Edwin Black omits the many and urgent appeals for moderation by representatives of the German Jewry to the international public, and I quote, "To the Embassy of the United States, Berlin, we became aware of the propaganda in your country about alleged cruelties against the Jews in Germany. We therefore consider it our duty, not only in our own interest as German patriots, but also for the sake of truth, to comment on these incidences. Mistreatment and excesses have indeed occurred, and we are far from glossing these over. But this is hardly avoidable in any kind of revolution. We attach great significance to the fact that the authorities, where it was at all possible to interfere, have done so against outrages that have come to our knowledge. In all cases, these deeds were committed by irresponsible elements who kept in hiding. We know that the government and all leading authorities most strongly disapprove of the violations that occurred. But we also feel that now is the time to move away from the irresponsible agitation on the part of the so-called Jewish intellectuals living abroad. These men, most of whom never considered themselves German nationals, but pretended to be champions for those of their own faith, abandoned them at a critical time and fled the country. They lost, therefore, the right to speak out on German Jewish affairs. The accusations with which they are hurling from their safe hiding places are injurious to Germany and German Jews. Their reports are vastly exaggerated. We ask the U.S. Embassy to forward this letter to the U.S. without delay, and we are accepting full responsibility for its content. Since we know that a large-scale propaganda campaign is to be launched next Monday, we would appreciate if the American public be informed of this letter by that date." And these are from the Jews in Germany, a group of Jews in Germany. "A worldwide message to veterans of the same date says," and I quote, the atrocity propaganda is lying. The originators are politically and economically motivated. The same Jewish writers who allow themselves to be misused for this purpose used to scoff at us veterans in earlier years. By raising your voice as honorable soldiers against the unchivalrous and degrading treatment meted out to Germany for the last 14 years, you will most effectively contribute to reassure this country." And these veterans are Jews who fought in World War I on the side of Germany. On March 26, 1933, the Zionist Association of German... Hang on. Wait a minute. Yep, okay. On March 26, 1933, the Zionist Association of Germany sent the following telegram to leading Jews in America, and I quote, "In a declaration transmitted by the Jewish Telegraphers Union to the entire Jewish world press on March 17th, we have already emphatically protested against anti-German propaganda. We have objected to mendacious atrocity reports and reckless sensational news, and we are repeating it today in public. We oppose any attempts to misuse Jewish affairs for the political interest of other states and groups. The defense of the national rights of the Jews and the safeguarding of their economic position cannot and must not be linked in any political actions directed against Germany and the reputation of the Reich." Unquote. The reader will hardly blame the author of the above for writing his message from his own Jewish viewpoint, and that he has selected and assessed the facts which he examines in accordance with his own opinion. For a historian regarding Black, this approach is to a subject is not very satisfactory, because political events must be seen in the light that the others too, in this case the Germans, have the same right to fight for their existence. If one wishes to be objective, it It just will not do to speak only about Jewish rights having been violated since 1933 without mentioning in this context that the whole German nation had been deprived of its rights. Okay, we're going to a break. Be back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
If you're taking 1, 2, 5 or more nutritional supplements, please stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food supplement you can buy. Men, women, children, even Olympic athletes the world over have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. And now take just one nutritional supplement instead of many. The Bio Superfood formulas are whole food products composed with 4 of the most nutrient-dense algae found on Earth. Bio Superfood for the brain helps with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. If you can increase brain health, the rest of the body is a no-brainer. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity and is safe for you and your family. Learn more and order your Bio Superfood formulas at BioAge.com, spelled BioAge.com, BioAge.com, or call 877-288-9116. That's 877-288-9116. BioAge, the age of advanced organics.
You know that maintaining your health is getting harder than ever. GMO, chemtrails, designer viruses, toxins, and mysterious syndromes make it very difficult to protect yourself and loved ones. So what can you do? How can you fight back and own your health? What if powerful technology existed designed to help you optimize your physical and mental well-being, correct chronic issues, and extend your quality of life? Skeptical? Sure. We were too, but results don't lie. Your body's an energy system, and the future of medicine will use non-toxic bioenergy to rejuvenate your cells with the perfect living energy they're made from. How do we know? Because that future began nearly 100 years ago and lives on today because of powerful results. T8 is a breakthrough technology that's transforming the science of bioenergetic rejuvenation. To learn why over 800 holistic practitioners and people just like you bought T8s over the past 3 years, visit antiaging8.com. That's antiaging, the numeral 8, .com, or call 979-227-2277. 979-227-2277.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
I'm sharing some selections from The Transfer Agreement and The Boycott Fever, 1933, by Udo Valendi. This booklet is available from the Barnes Review. And just let me repeat that one, the last sentence. If one wishes to be objective, and I totally believe that objectivity is essential, if one is to be objective, it just will not do to speak only about Jewish rights having been violated since 1933 without mentioning in this context that the whole German nation had been deprived of its rights. Countless Germans were unemployed, many expropriated, or economically ruined. In fact, since 1919, Poverty, civil war, and chaos reigned with little hope of survival for many, nor can it be passed over in silence that the conditions prevailing in Germany during that period had been largely influenced by victorious political and economic forces abroad, in particular by those who took advantage of multinational citizenship and who exploited their contacts with international authorities. Germany's surrender in 1918, the subsequent economic blockade, occupation of the Ruhr, the payment of massive reparations and its consequences, which were inflation and large-scale unemployment, the communist riots, etc., all enabled these forces to bring about terrible conditions either from outside of Germany or from within by way of immigration, naturalization, and financing with hard foreign currencies, predominantly dollars. Instituted concurrently was a management policy for essential political, judicial, economic, and journalistic positions, which favored primarily not German, but internationally interwoven interests. These were, of course, not always Jewish, but it should not be passed over that at least one of these pressure groups identified itself either as a coherent race, an internationally dispersed people, a religious community of one stock and family, and that this group had common obligations and targets from which it was considered treason to deviate. Dr. Nahum Goldman, for many years president of the World Jewish Congress and the World Zionist Organization, wrote, and I quote, "As president of the largest Jewish organization, I disposed of budgets of hundreds of millions of dollars. I directed thousands of employees, and all this, I emphasize again, not for one particular state, but within the framework of international Jewry," unquote. In his book, My Life as a German Jew, Dr. Nahum Goldman describes the phenomenal rise of German Jewry as follows, and I quote, "German Jewry, which found its temporary end during the Nazi period, was one of the most interesting and, for modern Jewish history, most influential centers of European Jewry during the era of emancipation. In the second half of the 19th and in the early 20th century, it had experienced a meteoric rise. It had fully participated in the rapid industrial rise of Imperial Germany, made a substantial contribution to it, and acquired a renowned position in German economic life. Seen from the economic point of view, no Jewish minority in any other country, not even that in America, could possibly compete with the German Jews. They were involved in large-scale banking, a situation unparalleled elsewhere, and by way of high finance, they had also penetrated German industry. A considerable portion of the wholesale trade was Jewish. They controlled even such branches of industry which is in general not in Jewish hands. Examples are shipping or the electrical industry, and names such as Balin and Rathenau do confirm this statement. I hardly know of any other branch of emancipated Jewry in Europe or the American continent that was as deeply rooted in the general economy as was German Jewry. American Jews of today are absolutely as well as relatively richer than the German Jews were at the time. It is true, but even in America, with its unlimited possibilities, the Jews have not succeeded in penetrating into the central spheres of industry, steel, iron, heavy industry, high finance, shipping, as was the case in Germany. Their position in the intellectual life of the country was equally unique. In literature, they were represented by illustrious names. The theater was largely in their hands. The daily press, above all its internationally influential sector, was essentially owned by Jews or controlled by them. As paradoxical as this may sound today, after the Hitler era, I have no hesitation to say that hardly any section of the Jewish people has made such extensive use of the emancipation offered to them in the 19th century as the German Jews. In short, the history of the Jews in Germany from 1870 to 1933 is probably the most glorious rise that has ever been achieved by any branch of the Jewish people. The majority of the German Jews were never fully assimilated and were much more Jewish than the Jews in other West European countries. My work in those years was essentially of a propagandist nature. I was too young and unknown to play a part in the leading circles of Germany, let alone of World Zionism, which was partially controlled from Berlin. Now, this was from the book by Dr. Nahum Goldman. And so he certainly gives a very, very accurate portrayal of the Jews in Germany in 1933. Unfortunately, Nahum Goldman did not mention the real influence of Jews in Germany's political life and administration during the Weimar period. With his $40 to $70 sent to him every month by his American uncle, Nahum Goldman considered himself, during the inflation, one of the highest earning persons in Germany. Nor was he the only one. This is a starting point to be borne in mind if one wants to understand the situation in Germany at the time. It presented itself as a real shambles for the German people, including the German Jews, in the early 30s. May it be noted in this connection that the State of Israel, after its founding in 1948, never granted equal rights of co-determination or even equal nationality rights to foreigners, certainly not to Germans living in Israel. But the 70 million nation of Germans, which in 1933 was fighting for its bare existence, its survival, its right of self-determination, was also entitled to think of its own strength to bring about a change of leadership and, in doing so, to eliminate those people from decisive positions who, it thought, were responsible or co-responsible for the nationwide chaos. The severity of the period of struggle and the memory of a condition which approached that of a civil war during the last years of the Weimar Republic tended also to intensify the reactions after the takeover in 1933, particularly in cases where those who did not respect majority decisions continued to incite from abroad after having left the country. And he's talking about a lot of the Jews who left the country. Who had felt sorry for the disenfranchised, expropriated, expelled, slaughtered, and starved Germans in 1919 and 1932 or after 1945. History must not be judged by double standards. It certainly will not do as was done at the 18th Zionist Congress in Prague in August 1933 to just read off the statistics of jobless Jews, creating an atmosphere of slogans such as never forget, never forgive, without pointing at the general worldwide depression, which was particularly severe in Germany, with 6 million on the dole. The fighting slogans proclaimed by Stephen Wise, president of the American Jewish Congress, at the second preparative World Jewish Conference on September 5, 1933, in Geneva, was neither consistent with the facts nor with the policy to maintain peace. He spoke of, and I quote, common enemy of mankind having no other aim than to conquer and destroy, unquote. He added, and I quote, speaking of the Jews, we stand in the front line, in the first row of the trenches, unquote. Stephen Wise did not even refer to Hitler personally, but to the German nation as a whole when he, contrary to the truth, continued, and I quote, put even more simply, shall Jews have any relations whatever, industrial and commercial, with a nation that has declared war against the Jewish people anywhere, unquote. He's a liar. He was a liar. Such agitation is bound to make futile any attempts at understanding between nations. Eventually, it should be possible to arrive at absolute value standards applied to relieve tensions and settle differences occasionally created by nature on the basis of equal justice for all. But it is not always the claim of certain people that their rights have priority over those of others, which causes permanent unrest. How true. How are world crises solved rationally and permanently? The historian has the duty and should have the courage to point the finger at such examples of double standards and lies to pave the way for an honest approach to problem solving. Let us compare this kind of dialectic on the part of Stephen Wise. Other names will be mentioned later on with the following report by Nahum Goldman about his friend Dr. Ernst Jack, J-A-C-K-H. Jack was the was editor of a series of booklets entitled Der Deutsche Krieg. He was a political writer, then director of the, Hochschule for Politik. After Hitler came to power, he directed the Academy for Diplomacy in Berlin. And I quote Jack, Goldman. Yes, that is who said this, Goldman. Jack, was a true Democrat, a friend of Churchill, who had asked him to come to London to accept the position of General Secretary of a kind of pan-Europe, which he had founded as a counterpole, so to speak, to Condorcet Clergy's organization. Jack resigned from his post in Berlin and was subsequently asked to see Hitler. He spoke to me about that several times. He was deeply impressed by Hitler, especially his eyes. Hitler behaved quite normal. There was no shouting or hysteria. Hitler, commenting on his excellent performance at the Academy, asked Jack to retract his application to resign. Jack answered and said, as you see, mein Führer, I am smoothly shaved. If I did not resign from my post, I could no longer shave myself. And he explained to Hitler, in order to shave, I must stand before the mirror. If I fired any Jewish colleagues but remained in office myself, then I would be ashamed to look at my own face. That is why I have to resign. Hitler took this answer quite casually and asked what he could do for him. Jack replied that he had decided to accept a good position in England. He asked Hitler, however, to allow his Jewish colleagues, who were about to be dismissed, a good compensation. Hitler replied, send me a list with the names of those men and indicate the amount of money that should be paid to each. I shall see to it that this will be done. And it was done, unquote. The internationally experienced diplomat and later Undersecretary of State in the German Foreign Office, Ernst von Weizsäcker, wrote about this period, and he said, and I quote, we were successfully trying to keep Jewish civil servants who wanted to stay in our office, but in cases where the files showed hostility towards National Socialism, nothing could be done, unquote. Now let us return to Edwin Black. Unfortunately, he does not commence his research with the 1919 Versailles Peace Conference, in which the Committee of Jewish Delegations, composed of a large number of Jewish organizations, as well as the Zionist World Organization and the B'nai B'rith Lodge, had already participated. They represented over 10 million Jews from the large number of countries. One of their targets, crowned with success, was not to allow any absolute national sovereignty. Obviously, they had in mind the sovereignty of Germany. The primary object of the peace conference had been the distribution of the spoils of war. Germany had been forced to accept conditions limiting its sovereignty. Who was it then who started to meddle with foreign affairs? In the German Empire, the Jews had fared very well. There had been no complaints, but rather, according to Nahum Goldman, a phenomenal rise of German Jewry. In 1919, Germany was defenseless. The idea to do away with the sovereignty of states, disregarding the new principles concerning the right of self-determination of people, promulgated in Versailles in 1919, and to which quite a number of brand new nations owe their existence, continued to be the main subject of discussion at the World Jewish Conference, founded in 1936. The central question was to remain sovereign. Was not discussed. Edwin Black begins his book 14 years later, in 1933. He does not examine the conditions under which Hitler took over, the heavy burden of political responsibility, and what really happened to the Jews. Allegations taken from the foreign Jewish press are occasionally quoted but remain unchallenged. On the other hand, he freely calls attention to events, activities, reactions, and ideas of leading men and organizations of Jewry in America, Britain, France, Poland, and other countries, as well as those of the Zionists. It can be seen from this study that there were indeed numerous powerful national Jewish organizations at the time, but a worldwide consolidation of their political aims had not yet been attained. Notwithstanding this fact, there was already a worldwide boycott against Nazi Germany. A World Jewish Economic Conference, the Second World Conference, Preparatory World Jewish conferences, preparatory conferences for the creation of a World Jewish Congress, a Central Jewish Committee, and even, as mentioned before, a declaration of war of world Jewry on Hitler, which was mentioned in the Daily Express dated March 24th, 1933. And no national Jewish group had ever disassociated itself from this publication. All these activities and organizations, I mean, they are so united, always have been since 1860 and before. All these activities and organizations operating across the borders provided a real background for using such an effective power politically on a worldwide basis at a time when Hitler was not even master in his own house. Only the internal disputes regarding policy separated the leaders of different international Jewish organizations from one another and prevented a central engagement of the combined forces of Jewry against Germany from becoming fully effective. Nevertheless, Edwin Black has taken great pains trying to elucidate a very difficult and complex chapter of history which had such a fateful and decisive influence on European developments in the 1930s. The historian cannot help but be impressed by this author's diligent research work for 5 long years on 3 different continents using a staff of translators and assistants to collect and evaluate the widely dispersed and often inaccessible documents. And when I read his book, The Transfer Agreement, I thought, I wonder who... Oh, okay, be right back in 3 minutes. Stay tuned.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. Theravim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from Theravim? Simple. Theravim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to Theravim.com. That's TERRAVIM.com. Theravim, the best supplements on earth.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Wouldn't you agree? Healthy people are happier and more productive. Obesity is the root cause of many health problems. Do you want to lose weight safely, look sexy and attractive without side effects and no chemicals? Lose weight without the side effects safely with Zeno's Organic Dietary Supplements. Made in the USA, 100% USDA certified organic. Visit www.zenos.com. That's www.zenohs.com. Try our products risk-free for a limited time offer. No purchase necessary. You only pay shipping and handling. Get your old, sexy body back now. visit Zenos.com. Get your free supplements now. Visit Zenos.com right now. www.zenohs.com. That's www.zenohs.com.
From The Transfer Agreement and the Boycott Fever, 1933, by Udo Valendi. This booklet is available from the Barnes Review. And as I mentioned before we went to the break, when I read The Transfer Agreement, and I thought, how in heaven's name did Edwin Black spend 5 years on three different continents using his staff of translators and assistants to collect and evaluate information? Who paid for that? Or did he just get together a psionym to work for nothing? Who knows? Anyway, there was an article, The Boycott Activity in London, 1933. Not only did it last for one day, we often think that the boycott was just temporary. No, it lasted for years. There's a story, The Jewish War Veteran Story by Gloria R. Moses-son. Came out in 1971, confirms the boycott war, starting in 1933 from the territory of the United States, and illustrates this with the following episode, and I quote, in 1937, the JMV, that's Jewish War Veterans, effected an important breakthrough in community cooperation on the boycott. The influential Jewish labor leader, Sidney Hillman, was prevailed upon by the JWV, by a JWV member, to approach John L. Lewis at the National CIO Convention. He detailed to him the dangers of Nazism to the American way of life. Lewis was impressed by the accuracy and scope of the JWV research, which Hillman quoted, and he promised to put the CIO into the fight. True to his word, he got the CIO membership involved in the boycott, and from this, the non-Jewish community, as well as those Jews who were still apathetic, finally became part of the campaign. In Pittsburgh alone, the CIO local sent out 100,000 circulars urging community action on the boycott. Harry Schaefer of Pittsburgh, who was national commander in 1937 and 1938, recalls how even Max Schmeling's victory tour became part of the boycott. When it became known that the proceeds of the tour would go back to Germany, JWV decided to thwart his plans. Schmeling's defeat of Joe Lewis had made him a very newsworthy figure, and his boxing exhibitions were sure to bring large gates. He did not figure, however, on the resourcefulness of the JWV leaders in Philadelphia, where the first match was to take place. The match promoters were approached and were told forcefully not only about Nazi atrocities, but about Schmeling's plans to export his proceeds to Germany, whose government was most vocal in its anti-American outburst. It was pointed out that not only would they incur the wrath and ill will of the Jewish community, but that it would be the most unpatriotic act. The promoters were persuaded the same thing happened in Boston and in other cities, and the tour was finally canceled. Schmeling went back to Germany without any money, thanks to the Jewish war veterans in America. And this is very interesting. The CIO... oh, got to go to our top of the hour 1-minute break. We'll be back after a word from our sponsors.